Good evening. Welcome to the Solaria Report. Today is Thursday, September 21st, 2017. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm in Aspen this evening. I'm here for the Nexus Conference on Cryptocurrencies. I said when Harry Blaser and I discussed the Amazon deal that the shift to 3.0 was now going to really start up the S-curve. I think the Amazon deal was a real ringing of that bell. The change will be astonishing and ruthless. I'm often reminded as I sit here listening to the different conversations, the great quote from Albert Einstein, technological progress is like an axe in the hands of a pathological criminal. The reality is the software tech culture, Silicon Valley culture, is very much in the mode of if it makes us money, it's good. If we can get away with it, it's good. And they're on a tear. A lot more about the conference. A lot of interesting people. I've seen Ellen Brown and Ed Griffin, and tomorrow I hope to see Dennis Kucinich and Ron Paul. A lot of good people here. Kathy O'Neill's Weapons of Mass Instructions. I'll put a book review up on it before the end of the month. I read it on the plane coming out. It's a very good description of some of the insanity going on with the use of software algorithms and the idea of running all businesses with software, which, according to people here, it's great. If we replace all the people and all the businesses get run by software, it's all going to be great. No problem. The algorithms work, right? Anyway, Kathy O'Neill is now gunning to be the Sir James Goldsmith of software algorithms, weapons of mass instructions. It's a good one. James Quaid will post his next post on cryptocurrencies, and at the bottom of it will be up on Saturday, will be a list of my recommended links. For the last month, I've poured through a lot of material with the help of my great friend and ally, Court Skinner, who's been a tremendous help on all of this. And we've come up with a group of links that I think really can help you understand the whole world, the whole industry. And if you want to participate, we'll help you figure out how to do that. Anyway, a full report on the conference later. Our theme tonight is 9/11 and the missing money. As our guest this evening is David Ray Griffin, amazing, remarkable man, talking about his new book on 9/11. The 9/11 had a great deal to do with the missing money. At the time of 9/11, there was $4 trillion missing. The Twin Towers and Building 7 both contained significant records related to investigations and enforcement or trading of the tech bubble, the housing bubble, and the government securities market. You had Cantor Fitzgerald, Salomon Brothers, which was then owned by Citibank, but had previously for years been owned by Warren Buffett. And Warren Buffett was a key investor in it. And then, of course, the SEC and FBI New York offices. The place hit in the Pentagon was the Office of Naval Intelligence Office investigating the missing money. The Army claimed the next year they couldn't produce financials because of the attack on Pentagon, which I don't believe, but it certainly, I'm sure, sounded good. The missing money continued after 9/11. At that point, the Pentagon really went unchecked, and that included massive amounts of money missing in Iraq. And then we know in 2015, there were $6.5 trillion. Dr. Kit Skidmore and his team have just found another $1 trillion. So we're now up to $19 trillion just for HUD and DOD without checking the other agencies. Money in markets, the U.S. dollar has popped back over that critical 92 line. So as yet, I would say that we don't have a break of the 92 line. That's very instructive. Following as it does on the Fed meeting, the Fed says it's going to sell $10 billion a month from its $4.5 trillion portfolio. That means it would take 13 years to unwind it. That's quite a long time. It's not clear to me whether they're going to sell it or just let them mature. And frankly, because I think there's so much fraudulent paper in that $4.5 trillion, I'm really wondering if this is not just a way of skimming off the dividends that normally the Fed owes. So by writing that stuff down, you're writing down the net profits available to turn back over to the Treasury. So, you know, I have never dug in, but I would love if anybody feels like digging in and seeing if they're really skimming those dividends out back door. It'd be a very interesting thing to take a look at. The Federal Reserve indicated it's going to remain on track to raise short-term rates later this year, which means probably not October, but likely December. Their annual inflation gauge, they say, is now 1.4%. Because they're excluding food and energy, they're too volatile. Anything goes up is excluded from the gauge. I would say this. I think there's some very deflationary forces. They attributed part of the lower performance to weather and hurricanes, and you wonder if there's a chicken and egg problem there. Fixed income, the TLT long treasuries back down a little bit. It's now at 7.5. The intermediate at 3.25, 3.125. The aggregate bond at 3.21. And the junk bond still holding very strong at 5.84% for the year to date. Equities, the S&P now up 13.16%. Home builders have backed down a little bit. They're up 14%. So it's coming into alignment with the S&P. The European ETF at 24% for the year, Germany almost at 23.7%, and the developed markets at 20%. So again, international significantly outperforming the S&P. And China, the large caps at 30%, small caps up 35.62%, and the emerging markets at 30.97%. So now Chinese small caps have surpassed the emerging markets. Commodities up down 4.74%, the commodities index. Gold and silver have backed up a little bit with the dollar being stronger. Gold now up 11.92% for the year, silver up 6.09%. Oil still in the doghouse, down 16.43%. Weather warfare continues. Puerto Rico has gotten hit very, very badly. If you look at what they were struggling with in terms of essentially bankruptcy and other problems, it wouldn't surprise me if you're really seeing a very important event in terms of negotiating on behalf of the creditors with Puerto Rico and some of the other islands. The patterns will emerge that will tell us a lot more over time, so we're just going to have to wait and see. We'll know a lot more about what happened according to how it sort of the cui bono evolves over time. The drama in Korea continues. North Korea is not in the Bank of International Settlements group. It doesn't have a central bank. A lot of their transactions are done through China. We've now succeeded in basically forcing China to shut them off. There's a new round of sanctions, and Trump gave a very aggressive speech at the United Nations, basically saying North Korea was going to be denuclearized one way or another. And this is very serious because Mnuchin even threatened, you know, when they were negotiating with the Chinese banks to cut them off from SWIFT. So this is a very serious negotiation. You feel when you're watching the North Korean leader and Trump, they're now calling him Rocket Man, but you basically feel like you're watching two alpha gorillas, you know, beating their chests. But it's hard to tell what can happen. Don't underestimate the power of the sanctions and invisible warfare. If you can cut North Korea off from, you know, significant trade with China and other trading partners, North Korea could be in a whole lot of trouble. Now, they've lived through that kind of relationship with the U.S. before, so they've been through serious economic hardship as a result of sort of pressure from the United States before. This is not the first. It turns out that Dr. Skidmore found another $1 trillion. He and his team found another $1 trillion at DOD of undocumentable adjustments. So we're now up to $19 trillion, but in the meantime, the U.S. Senate voted 89-8 to pass a $700 billion defense policy bill for 2018 that would exceed Trump's budget request. So I remember Trump's budget request was $59 billion and break statutory caps on defense spending. You can thank Senator McCain for this. The Senate on Monday passed a version of the National Defense Authorization Act that exceeds budget caps by $91 billion. It garnered support from all but four Democrats and all but three Republicans who voted. Anyway, it puts tremendous more pressure on the Congress for the Budget Control Act, because now, unless they make other adjustments you're going to face in a cross-the-board cut or sequestrations. So the bill surpasses the president's $603 billion defense budget requests, and this is a tremendous increase. And what is remarkable is to see the sort of combined support for it. It's almost as though the U.S. economy can't do anything but war. We can't envision another way to keep the stock market up but through forcing global war. There was one controversial amendment that got voted down, and that's the Senate tabled a measure from Senator Rand Paul to sunset the war authorization. Cynthia McKinney and I talked a lot about that in our discussions. The fact that after 9/11, the Senate and the Congress basically turned over an unlimited war authorization to the president, and so the executive branch doesn't have to get congressional support to go to war, which is, we believe, in complete violation of Article 1 of the Constitution. There's a great piece that Gary Heckman wrote. Gary has written several articles for us before. He's a retired town manager, and he wrote a great one called Going Local. It's up on the blog, and I hope you access it. It's very inspiring. Also, a book review, Adults in the Room by the Greek finance minister. This is one of the best books. This is really my recommendation for the best nonfiction book of the year. That's my expectation. The year's not over yet. In his naivete, he really believed that what the ECB would want is a plan for the Greek economy to work so that the banks could get their debt paid back. And what he discovered is no. What they want to do is they want to wreck the place so they can pick it up cheap and run it through their balance sheet. It's war by other means. It's very interesting. And part of the fight comes back down to who controls your contractors, who controls your payment systems, whether it's you, the contractors, the corporations who are doing them, or the backdoor viruses, that they've put in your system and their threat to hack you or cut you off from the SWIFT. So a lot of the payment systems are being used in this game of warfare. Anyway, it's a wonderful book to help you understand what was really going on with all the different negotiations in Europe between the Southern European countries and the Northern European countries. We're seeing a lot more stories about pensions. We told you that would happen. I had a great interview with Don Cox before the election. He said this would be the number one issue after the election. He was dead right. And then in the January annual wrap-up, I talked a lot about it and what it meant to changing us from a slow burn to a much more unpredictable situation. The reality is, if you take all the assets out of global two, if you take all the assets out of the government and the global 2.0 economy, but you leave the liabilities back there, then of course, if you want to steal more, the way to do it is to abrogate the liabilities. And that's part of what we're talking about when it comes to pension funds, because it's something of great interest to most people. I'm planning on doing the annual wrap-up next January on pensions and the state of the pension fund system. So a much more in-depth look then. Our hero tonight will not surprise you. It's David Ray Griffin, who's also our guest interview. This is a man who's really done a remarkable job of making sure the truth on 9/11, to the extent that we could know it, has come out. And he has done a great deal to attract in support and energize lots of very talented, capable people. If you look at the sort of trajectory when it first happened, one of the groups that came together, which I think made such a great difference, was Unanswered Questions, of which I was a part and Scoop Media was a part. We were, to a certain extent, inspired by a wonderful author. To this day, we don't know who he is. His name was Malcontent X. And Malcontent X published an article in Scoop Media, basically asking lots of good questions, and that inspired us to do Unanswered Questions. And then Unanswered Questions inspired Paul Thompson to do The Timeline, which inspired David Ray Griffin to get involved. And everything inspired the architects and engineers who have really done a remarkable job. And it's almost like a citizen's baton that keeps passing around and around and around. And it's one of those events where the truth can make an enormous difference. So David Ray Griffin is a remarkable person. He's made a remarkable contribution to all of us in his efforts on 9/11 Truth. Let's go to the movies, and let's go to the movies. I had to recommend what is really a leading contender for the Solari documentary of the year in the next annual wrap up, and that's the Gaia TV series Richard Dolan is doing on False Flags. It's not over. I've watched the first, I think, 8 that are up, and he has more coming, and they are just remarkable. Just remarkable. If you really want to understand your world, I can't recommend them enough. And of course, 9/11 was a false flag. He hasn't gotten up to 9/11, but I'm sure he's working his way up to it. For some other excellent videos directly on 9/11, I recommended this week the last recent one from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, called 9/11 Explosive Evidence Experts Speak Out. And then James Corbin has a wonderful video called 9/11 Follow the Money, where he covers a lot of the money issues. And it was 9/11 was very, very much a financial event, a very important financial event. So I would encourage you, if you're interested, to watch that. As I said, our interview this week is with David Ray Griffin. He was a delight to talk to. It's a remarkable interview. It reminded me so much of talking with David Talbot on the Devil's Chessboard. I think Talbot really nailed the Kennedy assassination. And if you look at the group that killed, or sort of the networks that killed or were involved in killing Kennedy and covering it up, they very much evolve into the syndicate, I believe, that probably did 9/11. So it's very interesting to see the sort of the quality of scholarship that is coming in and helping us solve this mystery and kind of see the beast before us. Anyway, it's a remarkable interview. He has one chapter that I really wanted to focus on in the discussion called Shredding the Constitution. And it really comes back down to this very important issue of why it's so important to enforce the Constitution. Okay, Ask Catherine. Hi, Catherine. Thank you so much for the work that you do. I've been following you for a while, along with Joseph P. Farrell, Richard Dolan, and John Rappaport. You're all pioneers of your field. My question is, with the state of the world and financial world being the way it is my IRA safe? I'm thinking not. I've been thinking about taking it out for a while now. Is this a smart move? And if so, what would you do with it? I was thinking about paying off some old lingering debt, and then I would have a little left over to put somewhere, such as silver or gold or maybe real estate. What are your thoughts? There are pros and cons here. I don't see any threat immediately to IRA. That could change. You have to watch what happens in the tax legislation. I don't have an IRA because the federal government played games with my IRA and had to bust it at the worst possible moment. It was $500,000, and I had to bust it and pay $225,000 in taxes. I didn't think they'd think I would do it, and of course I used that to comply with a phony baloney request that they were making on the litigation. So it was very, very much economic and spiritual warfare. But so my attitude is, I'm never going to go into one of those again. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. At the same time, if you look at the powerful contribution it makes to not have to pay taxes and to let your investment compound, I would strongly recommend that you, that if you've got it, that you consider keeping it. Now, if you want to put it in gold in or silver in a depository, you can. And there are also ways to put it in real estate. It doesn't have to be in securities if you're uncomfortable with the securities market. But I would not be eager to take it out of the IRA unless and until we really see a movement by Congress to do something that would impair that. Catherine, I'm a Solari subscriber and enjoy reading the information you provide. Currently, I'm reading your second quarter wrap-up interview with Cynthia McKinney. It includes a number of negative comments about the Federal Reserve. I can understand why the Federal Reserve Bank is bad. What I don't understand is why any other central bank would be any better. You named Hamilton Securities for Alexander Hamilton. Much of what I know about Alexander Hamilton is that he supported a central bank, First Bank of the United States, and Thomas Jefferson. opposed it. How is it that you support Alexander Hamilton but oppose central banks? Hamilton was trying to get the U.S. out of domination by the European central banks, and the idea of having American central bank was basically make America great. It was we needed to get out from under the thumb of the European central banks and the European markets. We needed to, what Hamilton was saying is, we need to have an industrial base to do that. We need to pool capital. Now, I don't think a central bank has to be bad. There are ways of managing it that can be very supportive, and it doesn't have to be a perpetual drain. So this is very much how you run the money system, and what kind of transparency and accountability there is. Theoretically, remember, the money from the profit from the central bank is paid over to the Treasury. But the reality is, if you look at all the games behind the scenes in the federal credit mechanism, whether it's the Treasury or the central bank, and the different parts thereof, like the ESF, I think the problem is how they're managed and the corruption. I would say it's very, very important not to consider or to consider changes or the design of the financial system without looking at the governance system, which is basically who governs and where are things going. One of the discussions at the conference is on the implications of blockchain technology and these other technologies to the central banking system and to the financial system and what they mean and how they're going to work. Catherine, thanks for the great interview with Christopher Mann. Could you please ask Harry to explain in more detail what he meant by Will's execution was a bit disappointing? If you look, I sent you a message. If you look at the interview that he did with Will Allen, he interviewed him before he went to visit his operations and was very disappointed with the quality of the operations. And he describes that. He put in an addendum in the transcript to the Will Allen interview on urban farming. So I would recommend you take a look at that if you're interested. Hi, Catherine. This is a link to a very interesting and revealing talk that John McAfee gave at a recent blockchain conference. It's mostly about the Internet of Things as creating a vulnerability in a manner in which cryptocurrencies will likely get hacked. At one point, he explains how a mass and simultaneous emptying of wallets could occur. It's well worth a listen. Have you considered doing an interview with John? We posted that video when it first came out. I think it's very good. And James Quaid is putting up his next commentary on cryptocurrencies on Saturday. So, again, and he's going to post it in that commentary again, so it'll be posted twice, once in topics, and there again. I am looking for someone to discuss security because McAfee is very much in that business. I'd like to get somebody who's not necessarily talking their book. But I think McAfee is very interesting, and I will certainly put on that his name on the list for consideration. I got a note from McKinney. I wanted to read Catherine on September 10, 2001. The U.S. Army published a SAMS report stating that the placement of U.S. troops in Israel was a very dangerous deployment for the U.S. because the Mossad was cunning enough to attack those troops and make it appear as if the Arabs had done it. This is a dream for Israel. She's referring to the fact that it's just been announced that we're going to put a U.S. Army base in Israel. This is what they've been angling for at least a decade, and with Trump now they have it. I posted on my Facebook page for the people breaking into my Paul Craig Roberts to please look it up if you don't know about it. This is horrible, and only worse is sure to come. The total capitulation of Trump and the people of the U.S. So she was pretty upset about that, and I can certainly see why. New question or new comment. PNG recently discovered the data mining emperor has no clothes. This has huge implications because a new advertising paradigm must emerge. What kind of opportunities are now worth consideration? How will propagandized media respond to such considerations? What if consumers started making choices based on variables not conducive to predictive programming? What happens when consumer reviews or likes, dislikes are no longer reliable? I can't properly articulate why this is such a big deal, but it is. For instance, Alex Jones recently included an Emmerich's Essentials organic lineup that in combination with his other offerings could potentially impact big players because those that support his show will buy his products instead of theirs. What if people change their purchasing habits for political reasons? What if people change their purchasing habits based on information from what they consider to be trusted news content providers? The future direction P&G takes might be worth paying attention to because it would provide valuable insight into all the above questions. This is a very important point, and this is what I've been saying since 2000. We vote with everything. We vote with our thoughts. We vote with our attitudes. We vote with our purchasing patterns. We vote with who we admire. We vote with our banking. We vote with our time. We vote with our media attention. And, of course, we vote in the polls. But everything we do is a vote, and you're giving energy. You know, what you pay attention to is what grows. And so, yes, I think what I keep telling everybody is if we all just do what we can do, we don't do more, we just do what we can do, and we understand our power to impact all these different things with our choices of our time, attention, and our money. It's what I always say, a mighty army arises. A mighty, mighty army, because we are many and they are few. So from your lips to God's ears. Hi, Catherine. I started this email several times just wanting to ask you a couple of questions, but the more I considered my questions and tried to stage them, the more difficult it became. Some of us are paying attention and cannot believe the world that we are seeing. I must have taken the red pill sometime in my late teens, but didn't understand at that time that I saw things differently than so many others. I live abroad in Asia for several years in my 20s, which also helped erase the film from my perceptions of America and our world. I don't know how I first discovered you, but I'm glad I did when I watched your YouTube video at the space conference that took place in 2014. You are the best credible source that speaks out about how our world we live in and the troubles around us. Who could imagine that our government is as corrupt across the many platforms? How do we get you on Sean Hannity or functioning as an advisor to Trump? It doesn't make any sense for me to be on Sean Hannity or to function as an advisor to Trump. The reality is, whatever I do, I have to do whatever I do with integrity, and I have to do it with people who have integrity. And the reality is, Fox News is never going to let me do and say what I want to do and say. I mean, it's just, you know, they're on the pro-centralization team, even though I certainly think Fox gives rein to people to do some very good things. So, you know, I like Sean Hannity. I post things that he does. There's no point in me working for the federal government. It just, you know, you want me outside being an honest voice. So we need good independent media. We need people who are giving an honest voice and an honest map. And the reality is, there's nothing I could get done in Washington. I mean, it's what I said in response to the last question. We need that mighty army to arise, and it's not gonna happen unless there's a lot of voices helping it do that. And that's what I need to be doing. We need your narrative exposed more broadly to the public. I agree with that. We've been working for many years on a new website. And before we can really do significant marketing, we need that website to go live. And I'm absolutely hoping it will happen before the end of the year. Remember, it's very important when you think about marketing of these issues that if I always use my email example, if I sent you an email titled Highly Confidential, Please Share With No One, and in it I described to you how every man can have as many erections as he wanted and every woman can have as many orgasms as she wanted, and I said, please, under no circumstances, share this with everybody, with anyone, how long do you think it would take before everybody in the English-speaking world had a copy of that email? 30 days? So when something wants to go, it can go. Now, there's plenty we could do to be more interesting, more entertaining, you know, and to do better marketing. So anything you can do to help us reach the audience that wants to be reached, remember, not everybody wants to know. We want to reach the people who want to know and the people who want to basically take actionable intel and do something about it. Because, again, we're interested in that mighty army arising. And so anything we can do to help that mighty army arise or anything you can do to help us help get that done, that would be wonderful. Also, if somehow the truth could come out about 9/11 and the other corrupt policies and issues with our geopolitical system, we have the possibility of change in this 1984 world that we are living in. Yes, I agree. I think the truth of both the Kennedy assassination and the 9/11 false flag would be very helpful. Okay, $19 trillion in undocumentable adjustments, unifying. one of the reasons I do focus on the $19 trillion in undocumentable adjustments is that's everybody's money. You know, rich and poor, young and old, black and white, north and south, east and west. It's all of us. It's a great unifier. And we're all getting drained, and we can't get caught up in the divide and conquer. We have to come around and get something done on the things that unify us. And part of the problem is if a group of people can steal and finance lawless behavior outside the law, you know, and have infinite money to do it, then if you don't turn off their gas, their car's going to keep on speeding by ours. Next question. I have some friends and even bright business people who are concerned about the strength of the petrodollar and will it get revalued against other world currencies. China, Russia, and Venezuela just recently announced that they will only be trading oil with gold-backed currencies now, namely their currencies, not the U.S. petrodollar. Some are even suggesting a global reset amongst many currencies throughout the world, with crazy extremes such as the dinar and dong amongst them. Could something so implausible really happen, or is this just another meme to lend false hope to the struggling poor and masses? The global reset has been used to justify, you know, more crappy deals or even financial fraud than you can imagine. I think what sells is creating some magical date that, you know, this is coming and it's going to be really big and really bad and you've got to do all these things before, so you've got to do it now. You've got to buy what I'm offering you now. The dollar right now is dangerous and dominant, and it's certainly on a long-term trajectory to lose market share and even lose reserve currency status, depending on how the military questions go. But the reality is, if you look at what's happening globally, there are no alternatives to the dollar for liquidity in the global financial system. It's 62.5% of global reserves. That's huge. The euro's not in a position to replace it. The Chinese yuan will take decades. I always say the Chinese have one or two aircraft carriers. We have 10. They have a regional satellite system. We have a global satellite system. So, you know, there's no serious replacement yet. And so I think all of these scenarios are just they're capturing the energy that we all feel. I did a presentation in, when was it, 2004, called Navigating the Falling Dollar. And if you look at a long-term chart of the dollar, we are navigating a falling dollar. It's been that way for quite a while. So certainly since the tech bubble ended. So we're in a world where we are losing our clout. And in part, that's why you see this sort of desperate struggle to keep that clout going. But I would be very, very careful about these scenarios about global reset. If you read our annual wrap-ups, our way of dealing with all these things is to have scenarios. It is a terrible mistake to have a single prophecy view of the future. No one knows what the future is going to be, and this thing could go in many, many different ways, to inflation, to deflation. We could have, you know, all sorts of events and nuclear wars, and that's why I use scenario planning. If you look at the archives, there's a great Solari report from last year called Scenario Thinking. And every year in the annual wrap-up, I do scenarios. And it's very important that you know, those are great examples, but you've got to come down and believe what you think the scenarios are going to be, what the probabilities of those scenarios are going to be, and get clear about how you would allocate your time, your personal and business plans, and your money to deal with those different scenarios. And that's the idea of sort of balanced portfolio allocations, is you're dealing, you know, you want to make sure you're fine in all scenarios. Next question. I live in a $3 million home on a golf course in Colorado with a $1.6 million mortgage. Do you think our real estate market is at risk along with our financial paper money system, and therefore I should be downsizing and eliminating debt as quickly as possible? A lot of this depends on your local market. So you're in an area which is going to be, you know, it's going to be strong in 3.0. You're not going to be slaughtered by the shift from 2.0 to 3.0. You're going to be, you know, you're going to have that wind in your sails. The reality is, if we go through a bad patch, do you have sufficient income or assets to make sure you handle that mortgage and you don't get caught and lose your equity, you don't get squeezed in a corner. So I don't know your situation. Everybody's unique. The reality is I personally don't want to be responsible for lots and lots of debt right now. So, you know, I chose to buy a very modest home. I still have a mortgage on it, but I do think that if you look at the risks now, the risks are that real assets are going up and the fixed income markets and the paper will be debased. So you're on the right side of inflation. You're on the right side of taxes. However, if we get into a deflationary spiral, the real risk for you is, can you handle that debt in a deflationary spiral? If you can, then maybe it's worth running the risk. If you don't want to live with that risk, you know, you might want to bring the size of that mortgage down or get it paid off. I would certainly accelerate your payments as much as you can. So it really depends on you and what risks you want to live with. But I do not like debt in this environment. But all signs are we're going to continue to be on an inflationary course with real estate. Again, I would use scenarios. Question 3, if the black budget deep state war model is crumbling, what comes next? I don't know that it's crumbling. It looks to me like it's really strong. All the guys who won in the bailouts, all the guys who won on 9/11 look stronger than ever. So I don't know that it's crumbling. I wouldn't assume that it is. This website below is predicting a severe economic collapse in America in the next 10 years where we lose 270 million people. The prediction is crazy, but the site seems well sourced from the size and scope of the other data that is presented. Do you have any sources that can vet this? No, I've looked at it before. The link is to Deagle, DEAGEL.com, and they have country forecasts. And yes, they show a radical depopulation in the United States. I've never, other than that website, I've never seen a depopulation for the U.S. that was predicted to be that severe. I don't see how you get that kind of depopulation unless you get a complete abrupt collapse of the military-industrial complex or the kind of intentional cleansing you would get with nuclear warfare or a plague. So I just see that scenario as unlikely. Where they get their assumptions or reasoning from, they don't explain them. So I just see that scenario as being unlikely. Dear Catherine, again, thank you for all you do for us. You and your site are helping me in every aspect of my life. Can't thank you enough. Question, can you briefly comment on how the missing money differs or overlaps with our $20 trillion of debt? Is the $18 trillion totally separate from the $20 trillion we know that we owe? If the $18 trillion is separate, will those debts be coming onto the balance sheet in the future? The answer is we have no idea. We don't know what those $18 trillion are. We don't know how much are revenues. We don't know how much are expenses. So we don't know, you know, if it was $9 trillion coming in and $9 trillion going out, then it's a $9 trillion problem, not a $18 trillion problem. And $18 trillion in undocumentable adjustments could be $2 trillion in cash or $30 trillion in cash. There's no way to know. I have a much better sense for the undocumentable adjustments at HUD, which I believe to be mostly and significantly fraud. So DOD, I have less personal experience with DOD. Anyway, so it's perfectly possible that we issued $19 trillion of, because Dr. Skidmore found another $1 trillion, so I'm using 19. We issued $20 trillion of debt and then stole $19 trillion of the proceeds, you know, so, or we have $20 trillion of debt, but we issued another $19 trillion of debt off balance sheet. It's not on the books, but it's floating around in the foreign markets, and then somebody stole that money out through the back door. So we're stuck with the debt, whether it's on balance sheet or off balance sheet, because the creditors certainly think, you know, it's on balance sheet or they're treating it as such. But there's not enough information to know what's really going on. But my point is, particularly because I can absolutely be very confident about the HUD money, this is not just accounting errors. Something massively fraudulent is going on. And then someone writes, Google, I finally took action and said goodbye to Google, except for YouTube, which will be a longer process of separation. Here's my open letter that you may share with others without my name, please. Goodbye, Google. I am one, but we the people of the United States are many. We the people enjoy free expression as our first freedom. Google has violated the core value of we the people by censoring hundreds of voices, especially those of whistleblowers, innovators, truth tellers, and others who don't agree with Google's political views. Since Google has turned its back on the basic right of we the people, I now have to turn my back on Google and say goodbye. Goodbye, Google Search. My new search engine doesn't collect my private information, track me, or limit my access to truth tellers and whistleblowers. Goodbye to my Gmail accounts. My new email company keeps my communications secure and private. And a lingering goodbye to YouTube that economically disadvantages and actively censors and disrupts truth tellers and fair-minded journalists who counter Google's desired groupthink. And as more of us find and switch to viable alternatives to YouTube, I, for one, plan to never return. Do no evil. Not anymore. Bye-bye, then. Good for you. I'm always amazed at everybody who uses Google. It's, you know, you're not safe. Why are you doing it? I don't know. Anyway, good for you, and I hope it inspires others to absolutely drop Google. Closing. Next week, we have a great interview with Dr. Mark Skidmore on the missing money. It was called 18 trillion and undocumentable adjustments and counting, but again, now he's got it at 19 trillion. And then October 5th and 12th, we start through our third quarter wrap up with news, trends, and stories with Dr. Joseph Farrell. So I'm going to be driving over to see him in person, and so there's a lot to chew through. Okay, that's it for this evening. Please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.